Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through your work with relevant, real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power,
fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See Dunluey.net.
Now, we are very happy to say that this evening we will be reunited in one of the great Premier League partnerships. We're going to start, first of all, with the main man, I think you'll agree. Kevin Phillips, hello.
How we doing? You okay?
Got to get you in first. I mean, you know, we'll bring in the other fella in a few minutes' time. We've got to start with you. How are things? Where in the world are you?
I'm actually down in Newmarket. Come down to visit my daughter. She's just got an apprentice jockey's licence. So we was down celebrating and was watching the Arc on Sunday as well, hoping that Frankie might get a win because he's a local lad and it would have been celebration. So it was a bit flat on Sunday. But yeah, I'm down here with my daughter spending some time with her, which is great.
That is a dangerous profession she's gone for.
Yeah, it is, but I kind of not try to think about it. She certainly does, and she's very brave. And it's some sight when you go and watch them at 5, 6 o'clock in the morning when there's 200, 300, 400 horses out on Warren Hill, which is very famous here. But it's impressive. And she's lucky enough to do something that she loves, which obviously I did. And the bonus is you get paid for it as well. So, yeah, she's loving life down here.
Yeah, I would think a beautiful sight in the morning with the sun coming up and the steam coming off the horses.
That's amazing. Yes, amazing. I'm not a particularly big horsey person, but even I'm in awe when I come down and see that.
And can you ride a horse?
No, but I think I've been down here now a couple of weeks, and one of the Irish jockeys, Dara Keenan, he's desperate to get me on a horse, and I did say to him at some point I might have a go, but at the minute, no.
So you have been going down the coaching route of late as well. I know there were stints at Leicester and Derby and Stoke. Are you still into it? Do you want to keep going? Did you enjoy it? Do you want more of that?
Yeah, I did. I really enjoyed it. It's a different, you know, it's a big transition from playing. I went from playing straight into coaching at Leicester under Nigel Pearson. Didn't have any of my coaching qualifications, so I had to quickly get through those. And at the start, it was difficult to make that transition. But as time went on, I really enjoyed it. And you know, it looked like it was going to become, you know, probably a way of life for me. But football being football, you know, before you know it, you're out of a job. And my last job was a year and a half ago, I think, at Stoke under Gary Rowett. He's gone into Millwall. Unfortunately, couldn't take enough coaches in, so I found myself, you know, not in a job. But yeah, I'd like to get back in if I can, but it's very, very difficult. Cool. But I have to say I'm really enjoying doing my media stuff now. I'm doing a fair bit of that. So, but if I can get back in, then of course I would love to.
It's so competitive. And I would think this year, with everything going on, a lot of things have just shut down. So trying to look for a job is especially difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think what a lot of clubs have done, and at Millwall with Gary, they've had to promote within, which I totally understand. So yeah, you're right. There's hundreds and hundreds of ex-players who want to be coaches, hundreds of players that have got qualifications. But it's very, very difficult. So, you know, but I'm very fortunate that, you know, I do get a fair bit of media work and, you know, I'll continue to pursue that avenue until anything changes.
To touch on your career at completely the opposite end of the spectrum then, am I right in saying that you spent about 4 years at Southampton and a fair stint of that was at right back? You were too small to play up top? Was that the, I mean, this is a real old school approach now. He's small, he can't play up front.
Yeah. And that was the case. I'd always been a striker. I managed to get a 2-year apprenticeship down at Southampton. So I moved down there as a striker, but was told very quickly that, you know, you're not strong enough. You're not big enough to become a striker just yet. We see you as a right fullback and, you know, it's either you take it or you don't play. So, you know, I took the option of, oh, well, I want to play week in and week out. So I just, you know, I opted to play right back. Played there for 2 years, didn't make the grade, got released by Chris Nicol. And then I had to come home and try and find another avenue back into professional football. So I was very lucky that Ian Allison, the old Arsenal winger, was manager of a local side where I was from and he gave me a trial. And it was only really one Friday night that he rang me up and said, I'd heard that you were a striker. He said, we haven't got no strikers tomorrow. Would you play? I said, of course. went up top the next day, scored two goals and never looked back. So, yeah, it's right. I did play right back for her, full back for 2 years.
If he had left you at right back, would you have been good enough to play professionally at the level you played at as a right back?
No, definitely not. I was useless at defending. all I wanted to do was attack, and I'd quite often find myself like a wing back nowadays. And back then, you know, it was forbidden. The brakes had to come on when you hit the halfway line. But, you know, nowadays fullbacks are totally different. But no, I don't think I would have made it as a fullback in today's game.
So you make your way at Watford, and then tell us about Peter. So Peter Reid, there's a loudspeaker conversation and he likes the sound of your name.
Yeah, well, I went to Watford. I was very lucky that someone plucked me out of non-league, given a second chance, spent 2.5 years at Watford, and then it was time to move on. Couldn't agree a contract. Agreed a contract with Ipswich Town. We drove up, me and my agent, to sign the contract. When we got there, we were told that Watford and Ipswich couldn't agree a fee. And the only way they could do it was by going to a tribunal. And I think Ipswich had already were taking a player to a tribunal, and you couldn't take two at the same time. So I would have had to wait, I think it was about 10 days, which I wasn't prepared to do. So me and my agent just sat in the car, and I was like, what are we going to do? I can't go back to Watford. I can't sign here. And he said, I know for a fact that Peter Reid at Sunderland likes you. They've just got relegated from the Premier League. They're moving into a magnificent new stadium. There's plans for a new training ground to be built. And he said, I'll give him a ring. And so we put him on the speakerphone in the car. I made out I wasn't there because I didn't want to. And as soon as he mentioned my name, my agent to Peter Reid, he said, I'll get him up here now. He said, bring him up, I'll sign him. And it happened that quick. And before I knew it, I'd packed my car the next morning. I drove all the way to Sunderland, which seemed about a 6 or 7 hour drive from where I was. And I put pen to paper and, never looked back.
You sure didn't. Well, let's bring in your partner in crime then. Niall Quinn, evening.
Hey, gents. How are you doing?
How you doing, Niall?
Good, good, Kev. Yeah, nice to speak to you. I think you've forgotten my number, but anyway, we'll speak. We'll speak here.
Yeah, steady.
No, really good to speak to you.
Well, listen, you, mate. It's great to have you on. By the way, we should wish you a happy birthday, Niall.
I was trying to keep it quiet, actually. They're happening too fast these days.
I can imagine they are.
Well, happy birthday, mate.
Cheers, Kev.
Do you want to guess his age, Kev? I mean, it's up to you.
Well, I would say I'm not a million miles behind him, but I'll leave it up to Niall if he wants to tell us.
No, we won't force him. Here, Niall, 19 years ago to the day on your birthday, we'll remind you of a good birthday for sure. Just have a listen to this.
For Kilbane towards Quinn, here he goes! What a goal it was, a classic centre forwards goal, a perfect cross, and Quinn with a diving header, a great way to get it.
19 years ago today, you were Ireland's record goal scorer. I'm sure you remember it.
Oh, yes, yeah, I do. Wow. The funny is, I remember things like that from where we went afterwards. And we went to Kyo's in South Ann Street. I got man of the match. I think Aircom were the sponsors then. I got the Aircom man of the match. And I was in there before lockdown, and my trophy is proudly up on the counter. I must have forgotten to take it home with me.
Is that right?
So it's still there. But yeah, that was one of the good days.
There we are. And then some fella called Robbie Keane came along, but we won't mention him for now. So first impressions, Niall, of Kevin Phillips when he pitched up at Sunderland?
Well, to be honest with you, we heard rumours that David Connolly, who was at Watford at the same time, was coming up, and the local press were saying the same thing. So we were waiting for David Connolly to come through the gates, and Kevin Phillips came through. We didn't know a lot about him. We saw his record. He scored a few goals. But straight away, the first training session, you could see the intent was there, not just to be part of the group and just, you know, make up the numbers. He was really hot to trot, and everybody went, hey, this guy looks decent. And it wasn't long then before, I think we played Man City in his first game at the Stadium of Light, and he had a fantastic opening game for Sunderland. He caught everybody's imagination and literally hit the ground running. So we knew probably very quickly that Peter Reid had stolen one from Watford.
At that stage in your career, Niall, as I understand it, you were, I don't know if disillusioned is the word, but certainly injuries had taken their toll. You might have been ready to pass on what was to turn out to be the great Indian summer in your career.
Yeah, very close. I even had the papers delivered to me by Gordon Taylor in the PFA about how I would quit and maximise my pension, all that kind of talk, because I was really struggling with a knee injury. I'd had my second cruciate. I'd done my first cruciate ahead of the World Cup in 94, my left leg, and then I did my right leg 5 games into my Sunderland career. So finding the path back was hard. I wasn't playing as good as I could. The injury was troubling me. And at that particular time, you know, I was almost washed up, and Kev Phillips came in the gates of the Charlie Hurley Training Centre. And I say, I'm not just saying it here on radio, but I say it to everybody, I had the best 5 years of my career thereafter. It was a combination of a surgeon named Mr. Bolland, who corrected had a procedure, corrected my knee a few weeks after Kev arrived. And when I got back, eventually the two of us hit it off. And look, we'll both say that without the likes of Nicky Summerby and Alan Johnson, who are you know, putting all the ammunition up towards us, that we wouldn't have got, you know, anywhere near where we did. But at the same time, you know, I'll always be grateful. Kevin Phillips gave me the most enjoyable 5 years of my career.
And it really did work out beautifully for you both. I mean, you both flourished. Even Niall, I was just looking at the stats to jog the memory. You played 204 games for City, 66 goals. Like, you played 203 for Sunderland. You know, it was like you doubled kind of your career in some respects with 61 goals. Player of the Year in 91 in the Championship when you scored 21 goals. Give us your sense of why the partnership worked so well, and then we'll bring in Kevin.
Because we didn't practice with each other or try and work it. It was all off the cuff stuff and just getting to know what the other player wanted to do. Kev will laugh at this now, but the last thing you wanted to do in training was be picked on the same team as him, because he wouldn't pass the ball. He kept trying to score goals. And so I made a point of not working it out. And we did a little bit. I mean, if you remember, Kev, there was things where I said, if I'm going up for a header, I'll always head it inside. And Kev was very quick to pretend he was going another way at that point and then cut in inside. And it looked as if it was all practice and rehearsed. But we just read each other really well. And I knew any time a ball came across, you know, if I couldn't score, you know, there was always going to be an area where I knew he would get to. He would never be there too early. He'd never be there too late. And his timing was immaculate. And it, you know, I've no, you know, qualms in saying it. He made me look far better than I was, because I would have played with players beforehand where I've tried to do the same thing, and you know, you just don't read each other or whatever. But Kev was brilliant. He mopped up things, and as I said, made me look half decent.
Kev, do you want to come in on that?
Yeah, well, of course. I take a lot of pride in hearing Niall, a lot of course, say that. I think, you know, when we speak to people now, they just can't believe that we didn't work on it on the training ground. I think the biggest bit of advice that Niall gave me and only ever said to me and Peter Reid was try not to ever be more than 10, 15 yards away from me. Now, whether that was going in behind, coming inside, or dropping in front for a chest down, and then we're laying either Nicky Summerby or an Alan Johnson or a third man midfield player running. And that stuck with me, you know, for my whole season, certainly the whole time I played with Niall. And, you know, for me, it was when I moved to Sunderland, I never expected the path that, you know, it was going to take. I never expected the goals I was going to score. And I never expected to play alongside someone of the caliber of Niall Quinn. You know, I grew up, you know, I was a young Arsenal player, and I do remember Niall at Arsenal. And all of a sudden now, you know, we're breaking records in the Premier League. And it was just a dream come true for me. But he's right in what he says. You know, we can't take all the credit. We played with some really good players. Even our two fullbacks, Chris Makin and Mickey Gray, overlapping crosses. And it was just one of those partnerships that just seemed to gel. And, you know, we've seen it in the Premier League over the years with the SAS, Shearer, Sutton, Andy Cole, Dwight York. You know, it was just one of those that happened. And I'll be forever grateful for it.
Yeah. And like, fans latch on to partnerships. They love them. Like you mentioned Colin York, for instance. You know, they're just a joy to watch. And I think, we know Niall Quinn's game inside out on this side of the pond, Kevin. But, I mean, he has an exceptional touch, and he had the vision. And it was probably an aspect of his game that people really underrated.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is for me. You know, whenever I do sportsman's dinners or speaking to the Sun, I was lucky enough to play alongside Peter Crouch as well. And I always liken the two together, because what they didn't, I remember Niall, I think you remember when you scored that goal away at Leicester at Filbert Street, he did a piece of trickery, a bit of skill that was either it was luck, he didn't mean it, but you know, knowing the way that I knew you and seeing you on the training ground, we all knew that you meant it. And it was just an incredible piece of skill, which you wouldn't expect from someone, you know, of the stature of Niall. And I've seen Crouchy do it as well. They had great feet, quick feet. But also, I think one of the biggest strengths Niall had as well was, you know, that hang time, to be able to jump in the air and have a look where I was going and then head it. Whereas a lot of players are just happy to get a flick on and you're having to try and read that flick on. So, you know, he had incredible ability to be able to do those two things. But you're right, the feet were unbelievable.
We used to play head tennis, Joe, every day. And what that meant really was foot tennis. And we'd play, you know, probably till 1:30, 2 o'clock. And on a Friday, you know, the manager would be coming trying to throw us out of the ground to say, you've got a match tomorrow. We just looked at the head tennis, or was it foot tennis, really. And I wish I had done it at 16 at Arsenal at 17 years of age when I went. I didn't start doing it, you know, till my mid-20s. And we had great fun in that. That was a special part of our training, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And even before a game, we was lucky enough at the stadium we had an area where you could play head tennis. We'd set head tennis up anywhere we possibly could. And we used to have a couple of benches in the room just off the first team dressing room. And the big thing that stood out for me, of course, it improves your touch. But the competitiveness that we had then was no one wanted to lose. We hated losing. We seen arguments, people squaring up to each other, the arguments, it was in, it was out. It was just, you know, I think that's probably what made us so successful. We were certainly in the first 3-4 seasons I was at Sunderland. And, you know, any advice like Niall said to young kids coming through now, which, you know, they probably don't play enough of, is, you know, if you've got a chance to set a little head tennis court up, it doesn't make a big difference in your touch. And it can certainly help you.
Just to follow, I want to tell you a story how competitive it got. Peter Reid used to play. And you might put one a yard in to win a point and he'd go out. And he was the manager and you couldn't really complain with him. But this particular time, there was a guy from Sky TV, Rob Hawthorne, waiting to interview him. And the ball was a good yard in at the end of the game and he called it out. And Rob Hawthorne was there. And Rob Hawthorne was, sorry, Pete, I saw that it was in. And he chased him out of the training ground. You know the Benny Hill type chase? he ran after him all around the Charlie Hurley Training Centre. And he came back. And I remember Kev and I were there and just said to each other, if we laugh now, we'll probably never get a contract again. Do not laugh, whatever you do. But that's how competitive it got.
Yeah.
What kind of environment, Niall, did Peter Reid create?
He created a very special environment. He trusted us. He knew we'd go out for a pint the odd time. There was no mobile phones in them days for people to report back on you. In fact, I'd go the opposite. I'd say people were delighted to see us going out. He hoped that we'd go home at pub closing time, which I think our wives did as well. You know, so that was kind of one of the rules that was unwritten. Obviously, you know, at times that was broken. But it wasn't all about just that. It was caring for each other in other ways, you know, making sure that that we all knew how each other were getting on away from the training ground, that there was, a link. There was definitely no splits or you know, no clicks. I mean, I can say that for certain, Kev. It was one fabulous time in my career. And they say, you know, the thing a player misses the most is the dressing room. And if I could double that up by saying the Sunderland dressing room was the best dressing room I was ever in for that period of time. And you'd all kind of characters. You'd quiet guys like Jody Craddock, Paul Butler, very strong characters. Steve Bould came from Arsenal, and he was just amazing for us. And for a while, Joe, you know, and Kev will tell you this, you know, Nicky Summerby, Danny Diccio, Kevin Ball, character, all different kinds of characters. But you really felt... you're onto something special. And looking back, we kind of know it was, because very few of us have reached that much enjoyment in anything we've done since.
Yeah, I would totally agree, you know, with what Niall's saying. I think one of the biggest strengths that Reid had for me was his man management skills, like Niall said, which I think so important nowadays, having been in coaching. Managers need to get to know you personally, your personal life, which I think makes you feel a bit special. And he had a great way of doing that. Now, don't get me wrong, if you crossed him, I think he laid it on the line straight away, didn't he, Niall, that, you know, if you crossed him, then, you know, your career is probably going to end at Sunderland. And that happened to two or three of the players. But I think the biggest thing as well was the respect we gave him, because he'd been there, he'd seen it, he'd done it. So you couldn't really question him. And, of course, Bobby Sexton, for me, you can never speak about Sunderland and Peter Reid without bringing in Bobby Sexton, his assistant, who... good cop, bad cop. You know, if Reedy had a go at you, Bobby would put his arm around you. If Bobby had a go at you, Reedy would put your arm around. So I think the combination and relationship that they had was something special, and that rubbed off on us as players.
Yeah, Bobby Sexton was the best coach I ever worked with. People would call him old-fashioned, but he knew the game inside out and got the best out of his players. He positioned us to deal with every team we played against. You know, as players, you kind of, yeah, you think you know about the team you're playing against and you know the way they play. But he would make it finite, even though he was old-fashioned. And one lovely story I remember from him, I had a fitness test one day, I had a bad ankle. And anyway, I went running with the physio and the Gordon Ellis, and it didn't quite work out. I couldn't get there the morning of the game. And Peter Reid came into the dressing room. I was on my own in the dressing room. We were playing Middlesbrough that day. And Peter came in and went, "Hard luck, big man. Get yourself right for next week." So I went, "Yeah, cheers, boss. Sorry about that." And as I was putting my clothes on, Bobby Saxon came in, slammed the door, came over to me, pushed me against the wall, and went, "You've turned into a Billy big time with your fitness tests. Fitness tests. You're reading about yourself in the papers too much." You know, so I had this big row with him. And in the end, I said, "Bobby, I've done the fitness test. I've tried to get, I can't even kick it. I've tried to kick a ball. I can't kick a ball." And then he went, "When did we ever ask you to kick it?" So we both laughed. I said I'd play as long as I could. Anyway, we won 1-0 and I scored a header. There's genius that you don't see in today's coaching world.
The other thing which strikes you from afar about Peter Reid is, Kevin, he's good fun. Like, we had him over here doing a roadshow last year, a couple of years ago now. He brought the house down. I mean, he's funny.
I've been fortunate. You know, me and Noah, when we've done sportsman's dinners with him, it's just, you know, even I, you know, having spent 5 seasons with him and listened to a lot of stories, you just sit there and you don't, you know, you don't stop looking at him, you don't stop listening. He's just a naturally funny guy. But he, as I say, you know, he was one of those, as Niall said, he didn't mind you going out for a beer. At times he would get the ump if we didn't invite him. You know, it was one of those. He was, he didn't have an issue, you know, back then. If you went out every night, his big philosophy was, if you're going to go out every night, you come in here, you work hard. He said, "I haven't got a problem." And you turn up Saturday and you perform. Of course you can't get away with that these days. And I wouldn't advertise it, but yeah, he's certainly a great lad. I've got some unbelievable stories from his England days as well, which are hilarious. Under Bobby Robson, with you know, with Gazza and people like it. It was just, you know, he's an incredible guy and very fascinating to listen to.
You're listening to Kevin Phillips and Niall Quinn. It's a Paddy Power special, Fueling the Mischief in the Beautiful Game. For information on responsible gambling. Sorry about that. I have a feeling that's Kevin Kilbane calling in, believe it or not. For information on responsible gambling, you can visit dunlewy.net. Just for younger listeners, like, because they might be listening to this and get a sense of things, but just to explain, so Sunderland get promoted. They have this beautiful new stadium, the Stadium of Light, and there's just a buzz about the place. And, you know, Sunderland, people love their football. Seventh in the Premier League in that first season, 1999-2000. Seventh again in the 2001 season. Things go awry after that, unfortunately, 17th in 02 and relegation in 03. But for those first two seasons, like, I think they were everybody's second team. And to top it all off, you've Niall, you know, this beautiful Indian summer, as we said, and you've Kevin Phillips' first season in the Premier League scoring 30 goals. So between all the strikers at Man United and Arsenal and Real Madrid and Barcelona and Bayern, who are steamrolling other teams around them, Sunderland finished seventh. Kevin Phillips scores 30 goals. Niall, that's just nuts.
Yeah, it's a real testament to Kev to point out that he's the only English-born European Golden Boot winner. And with the greatest respect to the football team, to do it with Sunderland was some feat. And it went so much so that when we were going out before matches, you know, we'd all be talking to our friends, who are you backing for the first goal? Kevin Phillips was even money favourite to score the first goal at every game at the Stadium of Light. I mean, it was just amazing stuff. And, you know, he also, you know, didn't have a full season. There was times he was out injured in that run as well. And, you know, the great pity for Kev and for ourselves is we faded away both years after Christmas. You know, I think the way things happen now, maybe there would have been a bigger spend and perhaps the squad might be strengthened halfway through each year, but we didn't. We persisted with one squad mostly in those days, and we faded away to finish seventh. And really, the bit that I regret most about that is we never played a European club match at the Stadium of Light. I think we had a team good enough to do it, but we just kept missing out by fading away. But going back to Kev's performance, you know, it was just extraordinary. And these weren't tap-ins. They were all sorts of goals, I know, but some of the goals are just so sublime. from curlers from outside the box. He'd start them 3 yards outside the post, give a goalkeeper no chance. He could head the ball. He scored plenty of headers, obviously either foot, you know, dropping his shoulder, taking players on, putting it in the far corner, and reading flick-ons, knockdowns. I mean, he had the full repertoire. There was no weakness to his game. And, you know, 30 goals that season is testimony to, you know, I suppose a lad who came in, you know, nobody really knew him. He wasn't a star. And he came in and showed what hard work means. And, well, Sunderland, you know, building a statue of him there soon, I think. But, you know, they still look back, fans now, to that time. And they talk about him, and rightly so. It was just an extraordinary achievement. And all of us got something out of it. I personally, as I said, got that Indian summer. The other players probably got extended contracts out about what Kev was doing. And the fans had the best time of their lives. 49,000 people every week. You could not get a ticket for love nor money to see Kevin Phillips.
Yeah, it looked like just such a fun time to play. Kev, I don't know. You seem like you were very confident in your own ability, but by the same token, you're going into the Premier League for the first time. You must wonder, geez, am I going to cut it here? Maybe 10 goals, maybe 15 goals? How are things going to go? I mean, as you're closing in on 30, I mean, don't know, can you remember that time well? It must have just seemed like life was surreal.
Yeah, of course it was. You know, all of a sudden, certainly it's a big goldfish bowl, isn't it, in the northeast? Having grown up as a young southern lad, lots of football teams, to all of a sudden, you know, not being able to go out for a meal without getting pestered every 2 minutes. But it was something I always, you know, I think even now I used to love having the route that I had into the professional game, being told that you're too small, being told that you weren't good enough, losing my parents at a very young age. My dad was 47, my mum was 53. You know, I've had many setbacks along the way, and I just, you know, I said to myself, I want to keep proving people wrong. And, you know, I think first and foremost, when I went to Sunderland, I wanted to prove to myself that I could score at that level and at such a big club. But when we got to the Premier League, I think one of the biggest things was an ex-commentator, ex-legend of a player, Rodney Marsh, coming out publicly and saying that he didn't think this kid would score more than 4 goals in the Premier League. And I don't get riled that easily, but that really angered me at that point. I just thought, I'm going to prove him wrong. And I just enjoy doing that. Mm. You know, it's part of my makeup. Even when I went into coaching, you know, you want to try and prove to people that you're good enough at what you're doing. And, you know, it was incredible. You know, I never saw my career going like that. You know, the first season, 35 goals, breaking Brian Clough's record, post-war record. 25 in the next season, having 4 months out with a toe injury. And then, like Niall said, that first year in the Premier League, I remember I missed 4 penalties that year. And, you know, when I look back now, 30, that really annoys me, because I thought I could have got 34 goals. I had a slight, you know, few weeks off injured. But, yeah, it was just, I think, you know, as well, I remember Alan Shearer coming out and saying that he didn't think another player would get 30 league goals in the Premier League. So that really stuck in my mind. I wanted to do that. And I remember the header against West Ham at the stadium at night for my 30th. It was a cross from Nicky Summerby. And, you know, when it went in, if you saw the celebration now, I ran to the far corner and did my fingers, you know, to 30 goals. And, you know, I can remember as if it was yesterday. So, yes, some amazing times.
I'm sure they were. Niall, I seem to have a distant memory from your autobiography years ago that there was a very nice win bonus as well at Sunderland. So it was a happy, I'd say there were some happy bus rides home.
well, that's exactly it. It's amazing the incentives in those days, because we were all on much smaller wages. But Bob Murray, the chairman, he called me in. Kevin Ball had been doing the players' bonuses for years. And Kevin got in touch with me to say, I'm not going in anymore. He always gets the better of me. Now, we were on probably about 300 a win and 150 a draw in the championship. And now we've made it up to the Premier League. And Kevin asked me to go in, that he was fed up of being beaten up by Bob Murray. And Bob Murray just sat me down and said, before you say anything, I've come up with a great plan. We're going to break the Premier League up into 3 groups. The bottom group, we're going to give you 2,000 a win and 1,000 a draw. The middle group, we're going to give you 3,000 a win and 1,000 a draw. But this other group, the top group of clubs, Man United, Liverpool, Chelsea, etc., we're going to give you 5,000 a win. I'll have a look back at the record that season, and you'll see the teams we bet. We beat all the teams at 5 grand to win.
That was part of the team talk.
Wasn't it just, you know? And I can remember watching the highlights or Match of the Day was on or something, and Alex Ray, just before the kickoff, you know when they put a camera on somebody and they're clapping and they're saying, come on, and he was putting the five up, you know, and I can remember him now. Remember five big ones today, lad, you know. different times, of course, but it just shows, you know, I mean, Jesus, we hit injuries and everything to get on the team to try and get that $5,000.
I can imagine those dressing rooms. There was a big win against Chelsea because there was the Gus Poyet volley on the opening day, I think, at Stamford Bridge. But then at the Stadium of Light, I think you scored a great goal as well, Kevin. You beat Chelsea. So that's everyone around putting five up in the air. I'm going to need to look back at all these celebrations now and see what you're all saying to each other.
Yeah, that I think, you know, probably I would imagine Niall would agree. I think that first 45 minutes was probably the best 45 minutes of my career, not let alone just Sunderland. You know, we got a right good hiding on the first game of the season down at Stamford Bridge, and you're right, you know, Zola flips it over to Poyet, the scissor kick, you know, and I think we had the team talk on the pitch at the end of that day, and Reedy was brilliant. He said, let's put it to bed, we got Watford Tuesday night, and we won the game and we were off and running. So when it came around to the Stadium at Light, and we had to make changes that day. Eric Roy came in, Paul Thirlwell. You know, we were depleted side, but the first 45 minutes was just incredible. And you're right, you know, I managed to score a great goal. Niall got two and I got two, and it was revenge. It was amazing. Amazing day for me, right. One of the best.
I forgot you scored two, Niall, as well. Jeez, that's
fine. Oh, I'm glad we stay in the background there. But the thing I remember was Chelsea were flying at the time, and they had two World Cup winning centre-halves at the club, Leboeuf and Desailly. They were heading up into the promised land, and they really thought that they were just turning up to beat us, having thrashed us on the first day. But it was an amazing time. I have a top three from my time in Sunderland, those moments, that first half against Chelsea, and the other two times we beat Newcastle away, Kev. You remember the fun?
Yeah,
half of
yeah.
That? Because that was so big at the time. I mean, Newcastle had a great side. Ruud Gullit had gone in there. They were used to qualifying for Champions League. And we ended up beating them in a fabulous night. Kev scored a winner, great goal. And the following year, we repeated it. And those two victories and that Chelsea match, like, it's just, it's a golden sort of memory or group of three memories in my mind that, you know, it doesn't get any better because you must remember, Newcastle had a good team, Chelsea were wherever they were, but the North East in general, Middlesbrough had a great team, Brian Robson, you know, with Juninho and Ravinelli. Newcastle had this team going to the Champions League, and Sunderland here were punching as well and fighting possibly above our weight. And we had Newcastle Falcons were the best rugby club in the country, there was the best ice hockey champions were in Newcastle, the Prime Minister was from the area, the whole sort of job scene had changed, the shipbuilding had ceased, the coal mines had closed down, but suddenly it was all back. Nissan was roaring, and the Northeast was a great place to be. I think our timing for us both to be up there, Kev, we were up there at the height of, yeah, if there was a boom, if there was a Celtic Tiger in the Northeast, and to win those games, to win those games at that time was just amazing.
Yeah,
that's funny. I hadn't realised that those off the field aspects to it, Niall. But now that you say it, it makes sense because there was just an energy about the place. You know, I know they're great fans anyway, and we've seen the documentaries of late and how much they all care. But I don't know. You could sense a certain giddiness about the whole thing. So that's interesting. I didn't realise things like Nissan and the economic side of things was a part of the story.
Yeah, the pit villages were opening up again. You know, you just see boarded up houses every village you go through out and around the region, and that all started to change. And so the people believed in it, and football played a very big part. As you know, Joe, we get a lot of credit here for Jack Charlton's team for kick-starting a recovery to the Irish economy, but football was very high in people's lives in the Northeast at that time too. Yeah. Always will be. But that was just a period where all three were fighting and playing matches in the top half of the Premier League, and you know, it was just a good time all around.
Yeah, I'd say so. Stay with me a moment, lads. We're pretty much out of time. I won't keep you too much longer, but I'm told on a pretty dodgy Wi-Fi line, you had you interrupting us earlier, Kevin Kilbane, hopefully you can hear us from Canada. Are you there?
I just got you now.
Hi, Joe. How are you keeping?
Great. Yes, we can hear you loud and clear. How are things?
Everything's great. Not bad at all. Yeah. Do you know it's Quinny's birthday as well today?
We do.
How old is he, Kev?
Oh, 40, 48.
Cheers, Kev.
We'll
leave it at that.
No, well, he's getting somewhere near that anyway.
Okay. I'm 54. Let's get it out of the way, lads.
Well, you look about 45. It's disgusting. Kev, we're about to let Kevin Phillips and Niall go and chat to you a little bit about the Slovakia game, but we were just having a trip down memory lane. I know you had a few difficulties towards the end of your Sunderland career, but when it was good, it was very good with this pair in particular.
Oh, yeah. In all honesty, it's probably one of the best pairings you're likely to see with those two, how they used to link off each other. You could see it every day in training, how those two worked off each other. It was a great partnership, but I was listening to the back end of what Quinny was saying there about the timing. When I went up there, it was at the very, very height of the club in itself, within the town, within the city as it became. It was just an incredible place, an incredible time to be part of the club. And I mean, you look at where the club is now and you're hopeful of they can get back to those times, but I doubt very much, certainly in the next 10, 15, 20 years, they're going to be near the level of performances and consistency that was being produced around that time, yeah.
Mm. Well, listen, Kev, you're going to hang on for a sec because I do want to get your thoughts on the match on Thursday. But Kevin Phillips, Niall Quinn, there's loads of texts coming in. I think you're bringing back a lot of memories for people. We're all suddenly feeling old that this is like 20 years ago. But loads of texts coming in saying they loved watching you play. So, Kevin Phillips, thanks very much. Niall Quinn,
hi, pleasure.
Much obliged.
Pleasure, guys. Thanks,
Cheers.
Man. See you, Kev.
Cheers, Niall. Take care.
Bye.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power,
fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunluie.net.
Your time and expertise are valuable, making focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant, real-time suggestions, wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.